Yes, fine. Good.
Welcome to the potential
to be amazing.
This is Mike,
Dubs, and Reverend Dr. Jimmy.
Right, and so we're here to talk again.
Back with you all in podcast land for another exciting and entertaining podcast. So what is our topic today, Dubs?
I think we're talking about fear.
Fears! Oh, I get so afraid, Dubs. I'm glad you're here to hold me. Okay. Yes. What about fears?
Well, everyone seems to have fear now because we're going through a lot of cultural things right now, and the coronavirus is present, but we're talking about fear in general.
Yes,
the localized fear we have at this time, which is significant.
Right.
But also the general fear of everything.
Everything.
I mean, as Catholics,
there's
been, you know, there's always the fear that we're not going to be good Catholics and we're not going to be in heaven.
So fears. The Catholic Church is sometimes criticized because it seems to be built on a series of fears.
Fears and guilt. I mean, there's a term, Catholic guilt.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that may cause a number of people to leave the church.
It's hard to teach about... Well, not even just leave the church. I think the church is a bunch of crap and that there's nothing to it because all it does is play with your mind and your emotions.
Well, I think that there are expectations that the church puts on, but it's kind of... There's double meaning sometimes when they talk about how the church is all about love, but there's a lot of rules and... apparently consequences if you don't follow the rules.
Well, so what kind of love is there?
Eternal damnation being one of them.
Eternal damnation being the big, I would say with the big daddy of them
all. Having your flesh fall off.
Burned as you are, you're constantly stabbed by little pitchforks and little devils.
I think you've been watching too many cartoons.
I just love being stabbed by a pitchfork sometimes, you know. Yeah, so again, this idea, the whole concept sometimes of Catholicism or the church being something that's built on fears and guilt, it kind of revs up other kinds of fears or guilts we might have, I think, as human beings. It just kind of adds to that. And yet, you're looking at what the church says it's supposed to be, as you said. It's about love, and it's about compassion, about healing, about hope. And yet, when we keep lumping on fears and guilts with all of this, where's the compassion, where's the healing, where's the hope?
Well, it's kind of hard, because you have to have, not rules, but standards or, you know, requirements. It just can't be a willy-nilly... You know, you can do what you want and everyone's going to go to heaven.
Yeah.
Because, not strict, but it's not a very attractive...
Well, is it plausible?
Well, yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, that raises the whole other question, though. Do people... Is everyone destined for heaven? And is that
they
not
have the potential
to be amazing when it comes to coming to heaven?
Amazing maybe being going to heaven.
Yes,
but
exactly.
They have the potential for heaven, but because we have free will, and we've discussed this in the past...
Yeah.
There's always that potential, but there's the free will to have the potential not to be able to go to heaven, right?
Well, there's a potential to... Is it not to go, or is it to delay? Because that's the thing. If you take a look in Scripture, that God basically desires that everything be saved. Everything be saved. Not certain parts of it, or certain elements of it, or certain groups of it, but that everything be saved. Then does that not mean that eventually... everything will be saved? And again, what saved means and how to understand that is also something is, does that mean heaven? Does that not mean heaven? But the thing is that there's a will that God has for everything to turn to good or end up good. But what do we do in the meantime in either delaying that or stalling it or putting obstacles or barriers, you know, in the way of that happening? And is that where fear becomes such a terrible, terrible experience for us as human beings? Because it stops the goodness that God wants this world to be from becoming.
Okay, but so then what does that mean for somebody who's trying to navigate their fears? Does it mean I can do what I want, it's just a longer time in what? In purgatory, in limbo, in hanging out in the darkness without Jesus being there? I mean, what's the delay? Where's the waiting room?
I'm floor number 3. but that's it. What is it though? You go back to the beginning. What is it that we are afraid of, or what causes our fears? Because everyone always quotes that the most frequent statement in all of Scripture is "Do not be afraid."
Right.
And if it keeps getting repeated, maybe that's something to listen to. Maybe that's something to pay attention to. But we don't, because again, of these fears.
I know, and you know, constantly saying the same thing over and over again and having it ignored is one of those things that's very frustrating to a lot of people because, yeah. as you said, in the Bible it says, do not be afraid, but we're still all afraid. We're still guilt. We have this guilt about whatever, all the rules, going to church, yeah. going to confession.
What you can eat, what you cannot eat, you know, how you treat yourself, how you don't treat yourself, you know, what does it mean to have fun? What does mm-hmm. it mean to have pleasure? What does it mean to have all those kinds of things? You know, I mean, is it all about denying ourselves everything? But if it's that, then, you know, when Jesus says have life and have it to its fullest, he's lying. Because a full life should be one that's fun and enjoyable.
Right, but don't you think that the reason we have life here on earth is not necessarily to prove ourselves, but it's to give us the opportunity to exercise our free will in an environment where we can, an environment where we can challenge ourselves to be the best person we can be.
Or is it to learn? Learn what it means to be the people that God has asked us to be. That's the big misunderstanding or ignorance. Maybe it's more ignorance than misunderstanding that we seem to have about what is the purpose of all of this. You know, because if this is a trial and testing period, well, we're always going to fail because there's so much that's broken and hurt in this world. You know, that we could maybe never put it all back together ourselves, and so if we're expected to do that, that's God setting us up for failure, and that's, again, a horrible God.
It's not that we're here to fix everything. It's that we're here to be challenged and see if we can overcome or handle what's happening in a way that is respectful of what Jesus' expectations of us are.
Well, yeah. Is it expectations that are, here's, you've been given a world to live in, and so I tried to give you, through other people's voices, a way in which to live in this world.
And challenges from other people.
Yes, but now I got to come to you to basically show you how it's supposed to be done. And that is always the bottom line. If you look at the Gospels, that's always the bottom line, what Jesus says that his coming is supposed to do. Not to make sure that we get into heaven, but to make sure that we live in this world in the way that we're supposed to live in it, because it's been given to us to live in it. Do our fears and our inability to understand that work against trying to live in this world as we should?
Let's talk about fears. But what are your fears?
I have so many fears.
Do you?
I fear not being able to handle chaos, because sometimes we're not able to handle what is not right in your life. And because you think that it needs to end up in a certain way, or you got to come to some kind of certain conclusions or solutions to things, that tends to not allow for what allow you to learn from why there is chaos to begin with. If you want to try to keep fixing everything, it's not going to work.
Right. That's what we just said.
Yeah.
We said we weren't put here to fix everything.
We're here to deal with
the challenges that come up.
Mm-hmm.
And that could lead to fear, it could lead to successes, and those successes will give you confidence to not be afraid to do, the next time a similar situation comes up,
yeah.
to not be afraid to do those things.
But it's to do those things, it's to deal with those things that come up through what it is that we've been taught, or what it is that Jesus taught. And we don't think of it in that way. It's not about fixing this world, because we can't.
Right.
But how are we supposed to live in it? And how are we supposed to live in it as people who say, I believe that this guy from Nazareth was really more than just a carpenter, and he changed human history because of what happened to him, and these kinds of things. And so he gave us way to live, and if you live, you should be able to live without fear. You should be able to live without fear. Because, you know, there's five things.
But
you
no one can live things. Without fear.
No one can live without fear, but no one has to let fear
run their life.
Become some kind of, I think it's some kind of insurmountable obstacle. I mean, that's what it really is now. Fear is an insurmountable obstacle. And we could try to point to as many things right now that are working for good, et cetera, but fear is getting the upper hand again and again and again. And that's not helpful. That's not going to do anything. You know, it causes you to be selfish and self-centered. That's because that's what fear does. Fear works to pull you inward into yourself and push everything else out. Because you can't control it. You can't control it. that's destructive to us. It's not just detrimental to us as human beings. I think it's destructive to us as human beings because we don't know how to we don't know how to deal with each other in the midst of what it is that we're afraid of.
So we can overcome these fears.
Mm-hmm.
We can have explained to us why we shouldn't be afraid.
Yeah.
But until you actually experience whatever it is you're afraid of, you won't overcome that fear. Some people have a fear of dying. Well, okay, until you die, you don't know what it's like. But at some point, you know, people have a fear, for instance, one of the greatest fears is the fear of public speaking.
Yeah.
But they do it, and they get through it, and they learn how to do it better. And, you know, I think fear, overcoming fear is the experience. From a faith aspect, you can't, I mean, the fear of going to hell, you can't overcome it. There's no way to deal with it, really.
Right, right.
There's no way to experience hell or heaven and overcome your fear of it. So I think that's one of the reasons that those sorts of fears or that sort of guilt never can be addressed.
You look at the spectrum, though, of things, and it's kind of almost absurd how those two different kinds of fears differ from each other. Yes, they are both fears, but a fear of public speaking and a fear of death, you know, and yet it all lumps around fear.
Right.
So
it's more of a how do you deal with fear so that you can feel not necessarily comfortable, but you can feel you have the ability to function.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I think that if you don't deal with it's smaller fears and greater fears. Don't deal with your smaller fears. Then you're not going to be able to deal with these greater fears that come into your life.
Why do people have a fear of talking to people?
Ah.
So if you have a concern, and it's a concern with how somebody's doing something, why are you reticent, or are you reticent to go talk to them about it? Like, all right, so you brought this up. Somebody had a complaint
mm-hmm.
about your homily,
mm-hmm.
which is terribly surprising.
This complaint, yeah. Like the 78th complaint about how much.
Okay. Anyway, somebody came in and talked to you about it directly. Yeah. I think I'm not sure I would personally go up and talk to any priest about essentially what's an opinion piece.
Well, that's
their
homily. Yes,
I mean,
yes,
it's that priest's opinion.
Yes,
not that I'm going to take it and say, well, the priest said in his homily, if I don't do this, I'm going straight to hell. I'm like, okay, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
But if it's your opinion that it's not getting into heaven, it's a delay in getting into heaven.
Yeah.
Right. Whether you agree with that or not, it's that priest's opinion. And I can find, believe me, other priests who don't have that same opinion.
Yeah.
And will solidly say, you're going to hell if you do this.
Right.
And I
can
disagree with them.
Right, right,
but
right.
But that's kind of an opinion thing. I wouldn't necessarily do that to a priest because...
But that, well, that's
not because they have any intrinsic special value, but just that, any more than any other human being, but just that, you know, it's an opinion, and somebody, and I can have a discussion with them about it, but I wouldn't think I'd go up in an angry manner and start saying, you're wrong.
No, but many people have, many people do, because it is the sense in which you aren't, it isn't an opinion piece to them. That's the thing.
Right.
It's not an opinion piece to them. It is a truth because you are the holy man and you are speaking it. You speak truth. However, if the truth deviates from what it is that they understand that truth to be, and this is where people's understanding of faith is so complex, because I have to believe things in this particular way. And if it is ever challenged, if it is ever
contradicted,
if it's ever made into something that I don't think that it is, well, then that will upset my entire world, because I've come to live my world with this kind of perception. Then I can't live it any other way. And my fear is that my world will be challenged. And when you challenge my world, then I'm going to come at you, because you're the holy man who I'm supposed to trust, I guess, in some ways, or whom other people trust. More times than not, the people who will challenge what I say in a homily are people who don't appreciate me in whatever role I'm in, whether that be a priest or be a guest speaker, or whether that be some. Okay. I'm not the person that they thought I was going that I should be.
You didn't fit the mold of a priest
that they have in their mind. They have in mind, and so I say things that are contradictory and challenging to their perception of the world and of faith. That then it's like, you know, you said this, and that's you know, heretical, or this is orthodox, or how can you say this and then not say this? You know, because the other thing is too, is that, yeah, you're up there, let's see, if you're giving a homily, giving a talk is a little bit different, maybe, right, because you got more time to spin it out. But a homily, you know, 7-8 minutes, you know, but you're up there and you, because I don't write anything down, I am just moving as I hope the Holy Spirit is moving me to speak. And so I will say some things and not include other things. That doesn't mean they're not important or it's not of value. I focused in on this thing because I thought it was important to focus in on. It shook up a person's world, and it caused fear that I was insensitive or that I was uncaring, or, you know, that the holy person that I'm supposed to be was going to be hurtful to others. Was going to be hurtful to other people.
So they were concerned about other people.
As well as themselves. Because they counted themselves among the group that I seem to have excluded from the homily. And so, well, that would do. What that would do in one way, I think, is make me fearful. Oh my gosh, nobody's going to like me. Nobody's going to like me being here. Nobody's going to like this. But that's immaturity. You know, it's like if I were to take, which is why, again, see with you, that this is why it's so good to be around you in so many ways, because there are so many things that are thrown at you, which you would not expect to be thrown at you. You are, you know, a K-8 principal, and, you know, working with little kids and everything that everyone would say should be most idyllic, you know. I mean, middle school notwithstanding, you know, it's like, again, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, wonderful human beings, but lower grades and things like that. But people don't think about the fact that these wonderful tiny little human beings come with larger human beings who are also of great opinions and not always nice and friendly opinions. And to be constantly thrown, you know, whether they be constructive or not, but criticisms and everything else like that. And yet you weather that, you know. It's like there are priests who you give a homily, you know, who and nobody, if somebody disagrees with it, oh, I'm a failure. Oh, the you know, this parish doesn't like me. Oh, I've done something to hurt this parish, and they're going to start talking about me. You know, everybody talks about you, you know, Dubs, and they will continue to talk about you, both for the good and the ill, more so the ill, perhaps, but that's even sadder, too, that they talk about the ill. But the same thing is true, hopefully, with somebody who's a priest, that one person's comment does not become all comments. Right. And that's a, but that's a fear that makes it into one person's comment is all the comments. One person's opinion is all the opinions. One person's voice is the only voice. There was a TED Talk, which I think would be good for us even to do ourselves one time as a TED Talk.
But together?
No. Yes. 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 Yes.
Individually.
Little buddy. The danger of one story. The danger of one story. And you hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
And that's it. But this is what it is. Fear is based upon one story.
Yes.
And that's why fear is so dangerous. You know, because again, it's looking only at one thing and looking at only one possible conclusion, one situation, one scenario, one whatever. And that is destructive to us as human beings, because we are not one story. We are complex of so many different kinds of stories. Sometimes we don't let those stories come to the surface, or we don't let those stories be told, or other people don't allow for the stories inside of us to come to the surface or be told. And yeah, that's going to promote all kinds of fear. That's going to promote all kinds of discord amongst us.
Well, I think that, and that's one of the things that I've talked to teachers about, is you can't take one email, one comment from somebody and treat it as if it's coming from everybody.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, the opposite should be true, because people, and again, this is a problem with people, in my opinion, people are much more willing to complain than to give credit.
Oh, right.
Or to give,
it's so much easier. So much easier.
A positive comment to. Mm-hmm. I am much more influenced when people will take their time to give me a positive comment. Because again, you go into stores, they don't have a positive comment.
No, so it's complaint.
They have a complaint card.
Yes, exactly.
So
exactly.
If you're going to complain about something, that's great.
Yes.
What we always tell our teachers and faculty is, if you have a complaint, come with a solution.
That's too much trouble. It's too much trouble.
And we're getting a little off topic, but because I think that part of that falls into kind of the fear of not being liked.
Yes.
Right. And I've said this a lot of times. I said 30% of the people will like the principal, 30% of the people won't like the principal, and the other 40% have no idea who the principal is.
Right, exactly. Yeah, which is the
best. That's one of the things. But and with the faculty,
it's the truth.
And I've learned this recently, the faculty is, you can send an email out, or you can announce something, or you can put forward a policy.
Yeah.
And people will disagree or agree with it, but in general, they won't come talk to you about it.
No, and that's
I don't know whether that's a fear or just a
it's immaturity. It's got to be it's like a latent immaturity. You know, again, what does it mean? Again, because two adults do not let fears, I think, get in the way of a relationship between them that's meant to be, and that is good, and that is healthy, and that is profitable for both, and things like that.
There's always the opportunity to have a good conversation.
Yeah.
Yes, it may get spirited at times.
Yeah, yeah.
But if there's mutual respect.
Yes, that is what makes a difference.
Right. There's mutual respect, then it shouldn't make a difference, and there shouldn't be anger, and there should not be upset. Agree to disagree and still remain friends or friendly.
Yeah. Yes.
With understanding at least some of the viewpoint of the other person.
Because I can argue with you because I care about you. I can argue with you because you are somebody with whom I can see a similar perspective, a vision, a way of looking at.
Well, I think we have a shared perspective, and I think our perspective is, of course, right.
Yes.
And the fact that we share it means that we can mutually reinforce each other.
Right.
As to our rightness.
But calling each other to times in which we are not living up to what we believe that perspective can be.
Right.
And that's, you know, but this is weird. There could be fear of moving into that, because I think that's where is to get, if sometimes I'm afraid of being alone, it is because of, it ties into more a fear of not being liked.
Right.
And the thing about it is, to be liked means you have to agree with everyone. To be liked means that that there's no troubles, there's no difficulties, there's no challenges, there's no arguments, there's no differences.
No, that's,
and yet that's not.
Unrealistic. I mean,
that's ridiculous. You can't. Nobody with anything that is worth time and effort and energy cannot have fights and things like that, and arguments. It has to be.
So I think we've gone to something here.
Yeah.
The fear that a lot of people have.
Yeah.
And I've heard somebody talking about this the other day. The fear a lot of people have is just what we've talked about, the fear of not being liked or appreciated or whatever.
Loved. Fear of not being loved.
Part of the thing that we're talking about now with this virus that's going around the country and around the world, actually, is somebody made the point the other day that it's hard for us because we're herd animals, where we have relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are not very many hermits. Right?
Right.
And so this idea, part of the fear of this virus right now is you can't gather together to share and to commiserate and to, to offer help to each other.
Right.
What
right.
happens is you have to go be by yourself
in
quarantine.
Yes.
That
yes,
causes a lot of the fear of this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because we are social creatures.
Right.
And what we have, the response to this is stay away from everyone.
Yeah.
Which individually allows the fears to foment in your own head about what this means. I can't talk to somebody about
right.
this.
Yeah.
We have the availability of doing that through email and phone and everything else, text.
Yeah.
But still, people need the personal contact. People need the face-to-face. They need to see somebody. You know, texting and emailing doesn't allow you, which is one of the reasons I readily admit that's one of the reasons there's a problem sometimes when I send emails out. You can't see their face.
No, it's a second or third level way of communicating with other people, and it works only to a point. It doesn't. It's not the way. Which is why again we criticize adolescents and whatever it is who live on phones and things like that, because it's not the building of any kind of relationship in reality. But that's the thing, is because the worst thing with being sick and the fear of that is the fact that I may be forgotten.
Right.
Because nobody likes to be around sick people. And in the situation today where quarantine means, you know, you are pushed to the margins,
mm-hmm.
you know, for the welfare of the health, you know, of others. And while there is a truth to that, the idea of the person who is being quarantined is I am a lesser person. Some of my personhood, my humanity is being taken away from me because of this. And if nothing is done to continue to connect, to show relationship, to show that you are not forgotten, well, yeah. then that's a, that is a frightening kind of experience. As much as people like to be on their own, unless people think that I can do everything on my own, I don't need anybody, we do.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that's the need for social contact,
yeah.
Which again, as you pointed out, the technology has
yeah.
kind of prevented, is difficult now.
Yeah.
Because we communicate so much by electronic means.
Yeah.
Somebody, and I happened to be talking to somebody yesterday about teleconferences, and we were talking about how, you know, you can't see people's faces on teleconferences. Somebody could be sitting, you could be talking for 5 minutes at a teleconference, and everyone on the other end of the phone line could be rolling their eyes and
putting
you on mute.
Yeah. And turning them on mute and laughing at you. They could be on the can.
Right.
They could be on the can, and they only knows when they flush. That's it. Because how easy it is. You know, yeah, people bring their phones to the toilet. Disgusting.
So I think part of the fear of not being liked is social.
Yeah.
Being socially excluded. You know, we're all in high school for our whole lives.
In one way, which was a terrible commentary on high school itself, but that's a whole other thing. But I think there's also the kind of thing where the fear of not having, of not being able. Of not being able to be liked is also the fear maybe of not being able to make friends after a certain age. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's another kind of sort of a lie, you know, is a sense in which you make your friends in childhood. You know,
right.
And I think there was always the thing where, who was it, Avril Harriman, a politician.
Is it a British politician?
No, he was an American politician, Avril Harriman. Basically, at his death, it was written of him that one of his greatest achievements was that the friends of his youth became the friends of his adulthood. That is rare. That is exceedingly rare, but yet it's held up, though, as some kind of model where you make the best friends you can in youth or in high school, and you never ever have that again. Well, that's a lie, because I think that's always being a friar. It's where, okay, yeah, I'm in a community with guys who I never ever would have chosen.
Fraternity.
No, it's a community. Well, with guys, some of whom I never would have ever chosen to be friends with. But then there's the whole rest of the world, mm-hmm. and you move from place to place to place to place. And are you ever going to make those kinds of connections again that you would hope to have made in high school or you made in college or whatever? And yes, you can. I mean, and that
seems kind of weird to me. Do you have friends you still have from high school?
Yeah. Well,
not do you have friends? I'm your friend.
This is the weird thing. Through Facebook, I have no. If I did not have the reconnection, I wouldn't have had those friends. I do have there are two people who I would say that I was still friends with from childhood, and that's because our parents.
We're
remained
friends.
But we were of the same age and things like that. But I changed high schools too when I was in high school. So midway through high school, I went from one in a different city to another in a different city. So that even upsets that. You know, it's like because you begin with something and to move again in high school. Yeah, again to give it a bad rap again to move midway into high school and be expected to find friends with relationships, and it was bad because this was an enclosed town that had its own high schools and grammar schools, and so you went from one to the other. Everyone traveled together. It was a pack, and here you was a new person in this pack mentality. And how do you kind of fit in? So through Facebook, yes. You know what's weird about it? I don't know. You don't know him. He's the 530 Eucharistic minister. Now he's an MC. He was in the second high school that I went to. He and I were
in
the second high school. And that whole thing, I never would have expected to see him ever again. And that was however many X years ago.
Right.
I think maybe about 12, you know, because I'm not that old. So about, you know, it's like, you know, 12 years from high school. You know, it's...
you're 30.
Get it?
Yeah, you're 30.
So, you are now. All of a sudden, there's this reconnection, and that is a friendship that's kind of it did come back into play in a way. So I think that again, the fear of not being liked or not being loved or not being cared for. So people have fears.
Yes.
In this day and age, that was a problem for the person last night with the homily. is that, you know, I talked about, again, the selfishness that comes up because of the fear, because selfishness is a byproduct of fear, because I got to protect myself, I got to preserve myself at all costs. Those kinds of fears, you know, what are they based on? Again, nobody said anything to do with toilet paper. They just started going out and hoarding it. And the New York Times has an article today about people who were hoarding all kinds of sanitary supplies and all the hand sanitizers and, you know, and surgical masks and those kinds of things like that. Well, yeah, you never know because the gas might, I don't know what, but surgical masks and things like that, because they were going to sell them at exorbitant prices, you know, on Amazon and eBay. But the reason why they were doing it
gouging,
is because, well, the reason why they say they are doing it, the New York Times reports, is because they wanted to get give their families a more improved lifestyle. And again, it's like, really? So the altruistic nature of hoarding and price gouging was so that my family might live better off than others.
That's selfish.
Well, it is. It's incredibly selfish. But yet trying to turn it into, but I was just doing this for the benefit of my family. Right. I wasn't doing this
trying
for me.
Trying to turn it
into a
virtuous act.
Yes, exactly. So this is where, again, this fear being a sin, and that's, people don't think about that. Because, hey, that's the whole point. Fear is a sin. Jesus says, God says, do not be afraid, because it's wrong. It's wrong. And this is, but we sort of don't listen to that, and we try to think of, well, healthy fear is okay. You know, don't tell children not to be afraid, because then they might get into somebody's van and drive away. Well, no, that's not the point of that. That's not where that will lead to, or where it should lead to. You know, there's a whole lot of other things that are wrong with that. But we live in this world where what fear shows is that we are not as much a community as we might think we are. Because one of the things in this very Vatican II 21st century parish that you and I are a part of, Dubs, mm-hmm. you know, that becomes a problem is that some of the people within it, you know, who help to run it and, you know, may say things like, you know, we've got to take away the cup because people will drink it, or we've got to, you know, stop passing the baskets because, you know, people will touch them, or we've got to tell people, we've got to stop all the masses before we got the directive to stop all the masses, because people will keep coming because they think if they don't, God will hate them. Well, then, don't call yourself a Vatican II 21st century parish if that's the case, because you've missed the mark on trying to teach people or help to lift them up or move them away from such medieval kinds of understandings of who and what God is. You know, it's missing mass, God will hate me. Well, in our little parish, why do we have people who think that way still?
Do we?
If we are, yeah, well, according to some people who are trying to come up with ideas
for this. God is
love,
so he always loves you.
That's not what some people think about. And that's, again, it is, and it isn't. And it isn't, because that's the truth. There are many people in this parish who constantly will come to me at Sacrament of Penance and say, I miss Mass. Well, why? I was sick. Well, that's not a reason, but nothing.
It's not a reason to miss Mass?
It's not a reason to confess. It's not a reason to confess it. It's not a sin. It's not a sin.
Right.
And that was the whole thing, is that we've got to close all the churches. We've got to close all the churches because people will still come, because if they think they don't, it will be a sin. Well, you can't call yourself a 21st century Vatican II parish if your parishioners are still coming with that after so many years after the council and are describing yourself in such a way. Because it means you're just like any other parish that's dealing with the same kinds of issues and nobody's looking at them. It's fear. It's all fear. And it's not healthy, and it's not doing us any good, and it's not going to see us through, and everyone says that, but it's not going to see us through this time in our culture and history, you know, in our world, which basically just seems to be grounded in fear.
I think what we need to do to overcome fear, mm-hmm. because we are social animals, is to be more understanding of people, mm-hmm. to engage with people more often, and get the benefit of the herd mentality of being able to be comforted by those around us. And I think that's how you overcome fear. I mean, isolation is the way to increase the fear. I mean, they've done all these studies, you know, isolated communities. Mm-hmm. They had that missionary who went to the island that hasn't been contacted by the outside world for...
Right.
And they killed them.
Yes, yes,
because
yes.
Because they're afraid of strangers.
Right.
Because they've been so isolated for so long, and we can't be isolated. And maybe the global pandemic will allow people, you know,
both through shared experience and shared tragedy, unfortunately, to be, as a world, come closer together and realize that we're all vulnerable, but we all need each other. Mm-hmm. And that will help overcome fear just in general.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's what we need. I mean, that's what we need. I mean, the fact that we need each other and being seeing that as something powerful and not just as something instinctual or habitual or whatever it is. The fact that we need each other is the realization of that and living out of that reality and that understanding is something that I think it will solve more things than we think it does.
Catholics, kind of bringing it back a little bit, I think as Catholics, we have to be forgiving and understand that in this time of fear, for instance, mm-hmm. the reason some people are quick to criticize or quick to complain is that they are fearful, not necessarily fearful of what you're saying or what you're doing, but fearful in general, and that's coloring the way they view things, and it's the anxiety they have that is causing them to have these strong feelings one way or the other.
Right. And this is where we need to read each other, and that takes a long time, a lot of effort to do that, because we are very quick at times to want to make a judgment or draw a conclusion before everything is known.
Right.
And
unless we have that personal contact, we can't.
Mm-hmm. It becomes difficult, or else try to create, in some ways, a means for understanding this person, even if the personal contact is not there. What makes this person tick? But yeah, you know, I think that's what I mean, if anything, being a Catholic or being a person who says, I believe in this world needs to demonstrate, it is that sense of not being afraid.
Right.
Because what drew people to Christianity in those first centuries were not heady dogmas of, of virginity and Trinity and even Jesus rising from the dead. You know, those were all things that were just, either they were too hard to understand or they just seemed absurd. What drew people to early Christianity in those first centuries was the inability of Christians to seem to be afraid. And that's not just
because... the ability to love, I mean...
Well, with the ability to love, but they were also not afraid because other people could love. Other groups can love, but it was a love that was born out of not being afraid. Mm-hmm. And it was more than just the fact that they would go, not many of them had the Colosseum experience of being ripped by wild animals and things like that.
That's good.
But those who did with a sense of courage and a sense, if the legends are true, with songs on their lips and stuff like that, they were not afraid. But it wasn't just that. They were not afraid of a society and culture in which they were living in those centuries.
Right.
And so what struck people who were outside of the Christian communities about what was amazing about them was that they were not afraid. And so really the slogan or the work of the early Christian community to the world was, are you afraid? Well, come away with us because we're not afraid.
Right.
Come be with us because we are not afraid. And I think that for us as communities in the 21st centuries of faith in the 21st century, we've lost that. And we become just as fearful and just as absurd and just as ridiculous as the rest of the world around us.
But
and,
is that because we're not really a community?
Well, we're not really a community, but I think we've also lost who and what we are. And what we are. Because, again, a lot of times, if you die from this disease that's going around now, it's the question is, am I going to get into heaven or not?
Is the idea that we're talking here about fear, again, to lead into heaven and hell? Or is there something here that we need to talk about?
Well, that's not why you enter this community of faith. That's not why you become a Catholic.
Right.
Is to make sure that you get into heaven. But we still teach that in so many ways, subtle and overt. And we got to stop that because that's not what this is about.
Right.
This is a community that is fearless, and fearless because its center rests in something that says, I will always love you and I will hold on to you at all costs and never let go.
Right.
And do we want to believe that? Because can we do that to each other? Can we say that to each other? I will stand by you and I stand with you and hold on to you at all costs and never let go. Marriage, that's what marriage is supposed to, that's the heart of marriage. Is that I will be good and kind and loving to you all the days of my life, no matter the cost. And that's not just something that should be evoked in marriage. It's because of what happens in marriage, other people should feel the courage to also feel that way.
Well, certainly as a community, they should. If it's a true community, yes.
Yes. And it's not just in times of crisis. It has to be at all times. Yeah.
Well, good.
Well, I think that we've gone ahead and helped to open up something that will be profitable for people, not just right now, but maybe also in the future.
Yeah, and I don't know if we actually were amazing today, but we, as always, had the potential
to be amazing. Right. And I am amazing when I'm with you, Dubs.
That is true.
And you are amazing with me.
Okay.
Is this our theme music at the
this
end
is
time?
Our, this is our exit music, music.
So until next time, people in podcast land, this is Reverend Dr. Jimmy.
And it's Dubs.
Wishing you...
Merry Christmas.
No! Merry Christmas! Wishing you a better tomorrow than it was today. See you later!
Bye.
Bye.